Hey everybody, this is Jeff. Just want to say a couple things before the podcast starts. We recorded this on December 16th in the evening. We had a discussion of the Dodgers rotation, which did include Hisashi Iwakuma at that point. It looks like things may have fallen apart. Iwakuma had some issues with his physical today on the 17th, and at this point it doesn't look like he'll be signing for the same amount. Maybe for less, he might still be a Dodger. Second thing, we did have some issues technically with our internet connection. So around the 1 hour mark, things get a little bit hairy. So it is two stitched together podcasts. Thanks for bearing with us and thanks for listening. Hey everybody, welcome to episode 14 of Homers at the Bat. Today's date is December 16th, 2015. Slightly banged up Jeff Crisco here with Joe Gruen. Joe, how's it going today?
Feeling better than you, apparently.
I got in a car accident. I'm questionable with a neck injury. So technically I'm on workman's compensation, but I am just doing desk duty. So it's pretty nice. I don't have to drive anywhere, but I would trade being not hurt for that. So
it's appropriate because we're going to talk about a lot of injuries today
potential injuries. So it's right now it's a hot stove season. A lot of things are going on with a lot of different teams, pretty much a lot of movement to and from the NL West. Joe, real quick trivia question for you. Do you know why they call it the hot stove?
I don't.
Oh, it's apparently you can sit around the hot stove in winter and talk about all the baseball transactions. So that's where it came from.
Oh, that's clever.
Yeah, okay. I thought it was kind of clever, but I also thought it was like, when was this phrase developed? Like,
relevant. Yeah, when was baseball invented? This is making me question everything.
Yeah, like who gathers around a stove? Was that like before they invented water coolers?
Right. Yeah. How long ago is this? Is this like prior to the 80s? Because I can't even fathom anything.
I can't fathom anything of that. So, we'll get started. The big surprise contract that sort of popped up and was signed earlier this week, really in the span of a couple hours. Was Johnny Cueto going to the Giants for a 6-year, $130 million contract or a 2-year, like what, $70 or $80 million contract? Oh, first couple of years worth 46. So it's a Fangraphs calls it the 2-year, 6-year contract. He has an opt out after 2 years. So, Joe, what do you think about Mr. Cueto coming over to the Giants?
I mean, I don't know. Like, I've never come straight out and said it, but I've always been a Johnny Cueto admirer. Like I've always thought that I think certain things that I've said and certain little comments that I've made over the years has made it apparent as to how much I really like Johnny Cueto. And just really like any guy that has come out of the Dominican Republic, any pitcher that's come out of the Dominican Republic, because they have this like incredible school down there for baseball players, and I think specifically pitchers, and it's like world renowned or like MLB renowned, and guys that come out of there tend to be like really super successful. And Johnny Cueto was like one of the shooting stars in that school. I can't remember the name of it, but I remember hearing about it like 5 years ago.
Is it the Charles Xavier School for Gifted Youngsters?
Yeah, maybe.
No. So Joe, what do you love most about Johnny Cueto? Is it his pitching, which is incredible? Is it his dreadlocks, which are incredible? And goes with that, his inability to wear a hat straight? Is it his awesome delivery? Or is it him kicking the Cardinals when he was up against the wall a few years ago in that big fight? He was doing those karate kicks.
I think it's a combination of all five of those and more. Like he's short, which is I always like. He's got like he kind of has that like Jerome Williams smile where you think everything's going to be okay, even if it's a disaster. Like, I don't think Kansas City Royal fans were shouting for Cueto's head last year when he was posting a 4.76 ERA. I think they were just like, every time he would just like come off the mound, he'd give him a smile and they'd be like, oh, okay, everything's going to be all right.
Yeah. Like,
and they won the World Series.
Yeah, that's just Johnny being Johnny.
Yeah, he just has that kind of appeal to him, like that kind of aura of like everything's going to be okay. I don't know. I feel really good about it.
Can we go back to the real reason why I think you've always been a Johnny Cueto fan?
Yeah.
It's apparently his smile, which reminds you of Jerome Williams.
It is. His smile and his face reminds me a lot of Jerome Williams. Like, they have like that same like ear-to-ear smile and like positivity. And they look kind of similar. I don't know. Like, I just – I think – I don't know. I've always liked Johnny Cueto. Like, okay, being serious, the real reason I like Johnny Cueto is over the course of four, his final four seasons in Cincinnati, he posted a sub-3 ERA at the Great American Ballpark, which is almost unheard of.
Yeah, it's a bandbox. That thing is incredible. Oh, my God. So I just pulled up his baseball reference page. He is one day older than me, Joe. I'll have to wish him a happy birthday. Yeah. But I saw a picture of Johnny Cueto. You mentioned, like, his ear-to-ear smile and everything. He reminds you of Jerome Williams. In his day-to-day life, you know who he actually looks a lot like in the way that he dresses and his dreadlocks? T-Pain. So I hope there's some auto-tuned interviews going on.
Oh, that'd be fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I saw a picture of him at like the AT&T store or whatever, and he looked so much like T-Pain. It wasn't like he was wearing this, like a hat on top of his dreadlocks, not like on top of his head, but like his dreadlocks were pushed up, and then he had the hat on top of it. It was pretty nice.
I mean, the real question here is, regardless of how well he performs, he's going to get some sort of animal nickname, and the real debate is going to be, can we transfer Pablo Sandoval's Kung Fu Panda over to Johnny Cueto if he continues to do all these karate moves?
Oh, that's good. I don't know. I was thinking because of like his he has a lot of movement. It makes it look like he has a lot of limbs with the dreadlocks and everything when he pitches, something like the octopus.
Octopus, yeah. That'd be good.
Yeah, and it would work too with their other signing with Shark. So it could be like Shark and Octopus.
They could go for a sea theme. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, like, you know, we could have, like, Under the Sea Day and Little Mermaid-themed things. This is great.
I'd love it. Oh, yeah, and the Crazy Crab could, like, do photo ops with them. We could bring him back.
That's perfect. So, anyways, back to reality. So, Cueto as a pitcher. So, you mentioned that he posted his career ERA with Cincinnati was 3.2. More recently, he's posted 1, 2, 3, 4 straight years of a sub-3 ERA. What do you think going from five, including 19 starts last season? What do you think going from Great American Ballpark, a bandbox, to AT&T Park, one of the best pitcher parks in baseball, with one of the best, if not the best, defensive infield behind him? What do you think that does to his ERA, Joe?
I think it's going to bring it way down, assuming that his arm is healthy. Like, assuming that he goes back to what he was less than a year ago now. I mean, really, like, a little over half a year. If he can start pitching that way again, he's going to turn out fine. I mean, he's going to have a sub-3 ERA, and he's going to be that number two pitcher that the Giants have needed for a while now. Correct me if I'm wrong, I think he has a pretty decent ground ball rate. Like, I think he kept his home run rate down, which is why he was able to have so much success in Cincinnati. But just correct me if I'm wrong on that. Do you know?
I'm pulling that up right now. Actually, I had his baseball reference up, so I'm pulling up his fan graphs. Ground ball rate, 42%, actually, let's see, about 40 to 50%. It varied a lot in there. So pretty good ground ball rate. So yeah, I think that'll the infield behind him will help, and I think when he does have fly balls, they will stay in the yard a lot because of AT&T.
Yeah, and he's getting the best defensive shortstop in baseball, and also because I believe the Giants aren't done. I think they're going to go out and sign a defensive-minded center fielder. I think he's going to get help from that, and on top of that, Buster Posey makes every pitcher that he catches better. So I think that all of that can only help. A quick thing to throw in there. Do you want to know what his ERA is at AT&T Park?
Sure, let's hear it.
169.
Woo! That leads into what I was actually looking up to ask you. So let me run down his non-Kansas City ERAs over the last few years again. And I want to just – I know I just said these, but I want to run them through again. 2.3, 2.8 – I'm just rounding. 2.8, 2.2, 2.6. Okay? This is playing in a bandbox.
Yeah.
Madison Bumgarner's last three seasons, 2.7 – 2.98, so 3, and 2.93. You said Cueto would make a good number too. Is Cueto really – Mad Bum's going to get the ball first, but is Cueto going to be the best pitcher for the Giants next year? Because I think he might just be.
I don't know about that. he would have to – look, possibility of it happening. But we're still talking about a guy who – He had a 4.76 ERA in Kansas City last year. So, I mean,
he was tinkering with his pitches, which you were talking about before we started recording. So, you said that little bit was tinkering with pitches. I'm worried it's some injury that's going to flare up and cause him to miss some time. But either way, I think we can sort of discount what he was doing with the Royals, because he may have been doing something else with his pitch arsenal to try to figure something else out. But I don't know.
If you're going to say, okay, he's moving to a spacious ballpark with a great defense, mm-hmm. you need to keep in mind that that's exactly what Kansas City was. So,
that's very true. I mean, I'm just putting it out into the world, Joe.
He would have to. No, I think it's a great idea, and I would certainly love to see it happen. And I mean, I think Bumgarner would even be happy seeing that happen. But he's only a year separated from finishing second in Cy Young. That's what people forget. In 2014, he was second in the NL Cy Young race, and there was debates that he should have been the Cy Young winner that year. Like he was definitely who won. Like, was it Kershaw or
2014 Cy Young? Let me see.
Or was that DeGrom?
2014 Cy Young award went to where'd it go? Yeah, Clayton Kershaw.
Clayton Kershaw. Okay, so he ends up going up against maybe the best pitcher of our generation. But there was a debate that he should have won the Cy Young that year. I mean, he had a 2.25 ERA. He had almost as many strikeouts as innings pitched, and he pitched 243 innings. So he's certainly capable of going out there and pitching a ton.
I agree. I mean, I was so excited for the prospect of Johnny Cueto, and the more I hear about it, the more I talk about it, the more excited I am. I mean,
I think a worst case scenario, and obviously the worst case scenario is he's god awful and this is the end of his career. But I think a realistic worst case scenario is that he posts an ERA in the high threes and mm-hmm. we still get a really good second pitcher or like a middle of the road second pitcher, which wouldn't be the worst thing in the world.
Yeah. If worst case scenario, he's, closer to Shark than he is to Mad Bum, I'm okay with that.
I'm okay with it too, especially with the setup of his contract, where he's got 2 years essentially to prove he's still great, mm-hmm. and then after that he'll either leave or the Giants will continue to pay him but not worry about starting him. And they'll develop some of their young guys. I mean, the reality of this situation is if Cueto and Samardzija both flame out, we're going to be bad anyway. Like, we should be rebuilding anyway. So to pay a couple of former stars that much money going into the future isn't the worst thing in the world. We should be rebuilding at that point. We should be trading guys. It'll probably be the end of the, at least the Bumgarner or Posey era in San Francisco. And that's a worst case scenario. If it works out in a best case scenario, then we've got a team that for the next at least 2 years can make it will probably make it every year to the playoffs in the NL.
I like how your worst case scenario, as you talked it through, is a complete dismantling of the Giants as we know them. But that's worst case scenario.
No, I mean, but I mean, let's be honest here. A worst case scenario of that after having won 3 championships in 5 years isn't all that bad at all. We didn't really squander anything.
No,
we're shooting for the moon this year, and it's encouraging to see it because this is not something we've seen from the Giants almost ever. Going out and signing 2 big name free agents. And the downside is it's still the Giants, so there's a ton of risk involved in these contracts, but it just wouldn't be the Giants any other way.
Yeah, and you're right, because I've been, you know, Facebook has that like travel back in time feature now. A couple of days ago, there was a post. I didn't do anything in it because I didn't want to feel like I was rubbing your face in it, but it was the Giants signed Mike Morse, and you were so mad because you were like, well, this is it. This is all the Giants can do in free agency, and they're not going to go anywhere, and they're not going to do anything, and then they ended up winning the World Series. Yeah.
I mean, okay.
But that goes to your point where every year where we just look around and we're like, okay, everybody got signed and the Giants got scraps. Like, what are you guys doing? So this is the first year really in a long time where they've gone out and gotten not one, but 2 named free agents. So I think I need to
defend myself. This was in 2014, prior to 2014.
Yeah. So it was December, 2013.
Okay. So that was the year that we get Joe Panic comes out of nowhere and saves the second base position. So I think, which brings me kind of to my next point, which is that it's great that we signed these 2 big name free agents, but the formula for success for the Giants has always been a guy from the minor leagues coming up and filling in a hole that like a glaring hole that the Giants have. And right now, I don't see that glaring hole. Do you?
No, that's yeah, I agree.
Does that make you kind of weary?
A little bit, but it's, I mean, we don't have, every year that they've won the World Series, there's been this, like you said, out of nowhere, like, savior that comes in and bestows his magic upon the team. And it doesn't feel like the Giants really need that this year if they go and get a center fielder.
Right.
I think we both agree Angel Pagan should be their number 4, and not playing so much because he is old and bad and slow.
And that center fielder might just be Gregor Blanco. Like I really like the prospect of going out and getting a center fielder. By the way, we also need a left fielder. No one's talking about that, but because
we have Brent. We have Brandon Belt. Come on.
Okay. let's not get into that. But we need 2 outfielders, but the most important is getting a center fielder because that's the one that helps your pitcher the most. Mm-hmm. So while I'd like the prospects of the Giants going out and getting a Dexter Fowler or a Denard Span or even a Gerardo Parra, it really isn't as necessary as I thought it would be because Gregor Blanco proved last year that he can hit 290 something and steal a decent amount of bases.
Yeah, he could be inoffensive enough that you don't notice him. He's never going to be great, but you're never going to be like, ah, Gregor Blanco, what are you doing out there? Like we did with Angel Pagan all the time. The only thing is he does. There is do you know what a toot blonde is?
No.
It's an acronym it stands for thrown out on the bases like a nincompoop. It's basically when somebody does something really stupid on the base pass to get them thrown out.
Really?
Gregor Blanco does that all the time, to the point that I started calling him Toot Blanco, because he is really dumb on the Bates pass, but that's something you can get over. But
well, not if you're expecting him to be your leadoff guy, which yeah. is essentially what we would expect him to be.
Yeah, so it's basically like you go first to third when there's no chance in the world that you're going to make it to third, or you get caught off a bag and get caught in a rundown all the time, or it's just trying to take that extra base, and Blanco does that a lot. So he would have to be a down the order hitter, like you said, maybe like a not a leadoff guy, maybe like a seventh or sixth, which really diminishes his value as a guy who can get stolen bases, get on base. But
well, it really diminishes the value of the Giants lineup in general, because we wouldn't have a leadoff hitter then.
Yeah, exactly. It would have to be Panic or Duffy, maybe Crawford.
And Panic's got a bad, or at least rumors are that Panic has a bad back. I don't know if those are true.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say Duffy is your prototypical leadoff guy.
Who? I'm sorry?
I wouldn't think of Duffy as a prototypical leadoff guy. He's not.
Oh, no. No, I wouldn't think so either. He's not fast enough, but and he's got more power than that. But you're right. There's no leadoff hitter, which is – I would love it if the Giants got Dexter Fowler, but I think Denard Span or Gerardo Parr are more the sweet spot.
I think I would be totally fine with that.
Yeah, I think that's the perfect nexus of value and production.
And then if they can't play every day, like that's a possibility with Denard Span, then you platoon him with Blanco and you just hope for the best.
Yeah, but really what's going to happen is Rajai Davis is a free agent and he's 35, so...
He's gone. He just got signed today.
Oh, he did just get signed.
Yeah, I was going to say, just as a relief to you, the Indians signed him today for $6.47 million.
Hey, God. $6.47 million for Rajai Davis?
No, wait, I'm sorry. It's $5.25 million plus incentives.
So $5.25 million. Unless his incentive is not being on the DL.
Exactly.
Wow. That's incredible. Okay, thank God. Because I was like, that's a classic Brian Sabian move right there.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, there's a lot of potential Brian Sabian moves still out there.
Oh, God. Did anybody go sign Mark Reynolds? I just have this
Bartolo Colon's gone, by the way. That's a good
thing. I saw that. Yeah, big fat Bartolo got signed today. So, all right. So I think since we're no longer talking about Cueto, we should talk about the other free agency signing that you and I got into it over. This is like the first time we've had a sports discussion in the last week where we've agreed. But Jeff Samardzija signed a 5-year, $90 million contract. I think it's a little high. Before the Johnny Cueto signing, we're saying it was egregiously high for Jeff Samardzija, which the more we talk, I do sort of agree it's way too much for Jeff Samardzija, but I do like having Jeff Samardzija on the team. So what do you think about the shark to go with the octopus?
So the shark is another interesting proposition. He pitched fairly well, obviously not as good as Cueto in his years in Chicago, which is also a bandbox. It's a stadium where a lot of home runs get hit. And then he goes to Oakland and you think, oh, he's going to get better. And he actually got worse. At least for the few games that he pitched for Oakland, he got slightly worse. I mean, he had a 3.14 ERA coming up from a 2.83. So not significantly worse, but it was worse enough that they decided not to retain him. Then he goes to Chicago, the White Sox, and he ends up putting up a 4.96 ERA.
That was a disaster season for him last year.
And it was just a bad season overall, but at least he went out and pitched over 200 innings. I mean, if there's any positive there. Unfortunately, he also had 29 home runs, 118 earned runs, 228 hits, just crazy numbers. And he's also 30, so that's not exactly a point where you expect him to improve from. But at the same time, Chicago White Sox stadium is also kind of a bandbox. I mean, there's a lot of runs that are scored there. So,
And we talked about it before too. That White Sox defense was like all time bad last year too. So, when he was giving up home runs, which he gave up a lot of time, it was a lot of men on base because there was nobody twirling defensive gems behind him like a Brandon Crawford would be.
Right. Yeah, I mean, and that's a really good point. The scarier thing about Samardzija is that he doesn't have a solid explanation for why that happened. Like the earned runs, okay, maybe. The amount of runs he gave up, maybe. The home runs, the fact that they're the most of his career, there's no explanation for that physiologically, psychologically, none of it. Like there's nothing that's come out that said, oh, he was tinkering with stuff, like what's come out with Cueto. It's just kind of an anomaly and something that people didn't expect. And so that's where I'm a little hesitant and not as positive on him. That being said, both of these contracts, and I don't know if I already said this today on today's podcast, they complement each other. Like that's the fact that both were signed makes each one look less bad and infinitely better.
Yeah.
To me.
Because the Cueto one is front loaded, and Samardzija sort of ramps up. He's getting only $9 million this year, so we talked about financially. It's sort of they're offsetting each other because the Giants, I'm sure, they fully expect Cueto to opt out after 2 years,
right?
So, I was going to try to make you feel better about all of his home runs last year, but all but three would have been home runs at AT&T Park, so that's bad.
He was getting smoked. It was unfortunate. But at the same time, you never know what's going to happen. It's not like Chicago. The White Sox are notorious for producing great pitchers. And the Giants, I mean, if they have one thing going for them, it's that Dave Rigetti might be the best pitching coach in baseball, next to who does it for the Cardinals?
I don't know. The only other pitching coach I know is Ray Searidge, which is Pittsburgh.
Oh, okay. And he's pretty good, too. But I think with what Rigetti's done with some guys like Jake Peavy, how he for a period there made Lincecum look competent post his disaster year or his disaster years. I think it's safe enough to say that Rigetti is one of the top five pitching coaches at least. And it's arguable that Samardzija has never had somebody of that quality in his year.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's any hope for Jeff Samardzija, it's the Giants. And mm-hmm. If he doesn't do well in the Giants, we've got him for 5 years at 18.
All right.
Which is unfortunate.
It's the Barry Zito contract, the Tim Lincecum contract.
Right.
Dave's looked around and was like, oh, no, I don't have any garbage contract left except for Matt Gaines. I need to get more.
Right.
So I'm looking at Samardzija's home runs last year. He gave 29, which is bad. But I'm looking at the breakdown, which Hit Tracker Online rates him as just enough or no doubt or stuff like that, or lucky. 12 of his 29 were just enough or lucky. So that's good.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, if he gets luckier or the, you know, cause one thing that the true home run landing spots don't account for is, and the overlays, it doesn't account for the marine layer at AT&T, which kills a lot of balls.
Uh-huh.
So
yeah, the thickness of the air in general. I mean,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's why I feel really good about it. I think he'll be a lot better next year. I think he's going to be a lot closer to Chicago Cubs Jeff Samardzija. I think he's going to forget all about Oakland and White Sox Jeff Samardzija.
I mean, he's had four straight years of 20 home runs or more. Mm-hmm. Surrendered, which only, even with the thick air, even with the spacious dimensions of AT&T, it only makes it more dire that we go out and get a defensive center fielder, or that we have a defensive center fielder ready to go, and a defensive outfield in general, because at the very least, he's going to be giving up a lot of fly balls.
Yeah, and that 20 home runs isn't killer. It's not killer. Cueto gave up 22 that Cy Young season. I still had
right.
Up. So 20 home runs isn't killer.
Right, but coupled with a poor walk rate, which is
yeah, that's what'll get you is yeah. The walk rate. That's what I'm hoping gets offset, but we'll see. Mad Bum's given up 20 home runs 2 years in a row. Joe, should we cut Madison Bumgarner?
I don't know about that.
Is he the worst pitcher or the worst pitcher?
Has he really had 20 home runs given? Oh, but he's, I mean, he has the excuse of constantly pitching around the zone, so.
Oh, yeah. No. I'm just kidding. He's, yeah, he will give up a lot of home runs, but he will, there'll usually be solos, which won't hurt you.
Right.
So, all righty.
So I like both contracts. You know, looking back on that argument, I mean, look, if we never signed Cueto, I would still be sitting here saying that the Samardzija thing was a bad deal. A, because it doesn't entirely fix our rotation, even if he is great. And B, based off of the stats he's had, it just didn't seem like he deserved it. But coupled with the Cueto contract, in a best-case scenario where they both return to what they were 2 years ago, it turns out to be a great deal.
Yeah. I thought through what you were saying, and yeah, I think you're right, where if – we could have spent a little less and gotten a slightly worse pitcher and gotten help somewhere else. But if we spend that money and we go out and get Cueto, then sure, spend it. That's fine.
Exactly. I would much rather see them. It's not our money.
It's not our money. You know, if they're willing to spend it, go for it, do it.
And I would much rather see them spend money on the rotation than anywhere else. That's the way you win championships in baseball, is by putting money, putting prospects into the rotation. You don't do it any other way.
Yeah, you can fill in around. You can fudge other things, like putting Brandon Belt in left field.
Did you know that Brandon Belt has the best fielding percentage of any first baseman?
Really? That's a good reason to put him in left field.
Yeah.
Think how good he would be out there, Joe.
Yeah, right. I Okay. I mean, so going back to the rotation thing, I'm glad to see them spending on the rotation. I'm glad to at least have the hope that they have a chance at the best rotation in the National League next year. It probably won't happen. It'll probably still be the Mets, but they at least have one that can compete with the Mets should they meet them in the playoffs. And if the Mets showed anything last year, it's that your whole offense can kind of fall apart. But if you've got a strong rotation, you're going to make it far in the playoffs.
Yeah, I want to commend you, Joe. That was impressive, the way that you managed to squeeze the Mets into there. That's impressive. It's like an Easter egg. Like, how will Joe work the Mets into this one?
Well, I haven't talked about the Cubs yet.
Yeah, well, we're getting to the Cubs. But first, before we talk about that, you mentioned the rotation as a whole. So I want to talk about today the there was a big trade between the Dodgers, the White Sox, and the Reds. Todd Frazier went to the White Sox, and some prospects got moved around. A whole bunch got moved to the Dodgers. The prospects themselves kind of inconsequential for this discussion, but what the Dodgers appear to be doing, what they've been linked to, is they really want Jose Fernandez, and the Marlins want a ton of prospects for Jose Fernandez. So the internet rumor mill is thinking that the move today was positioning the Dodgers positioning the Dodgers as a precursor to go get Jose Fernandez. So it's starting to look more and more like that's what's going to happen. So if the Dodgers do end up with Jose Fernandez, where do you think they compare to the Giants with the rotations, which I'll run down both right now, just so that we can have them at the front of our minds. Giants is going to be Bumgarner, Cueto, Samardzija, and then two of Peavy, Kane, and Heston. And I think Peavy, Kane, and Heston comes down to Kane's injury rehab and performance in the spring training, honestly.
Correct.
Yeah, so that's the Giants rotation. With Jose Fernandez, it would give the Dodgers Clayton Kershaw, Jose Fernandez, Hisashi Iwakuma, which they signed as a free agent this offseason, Hyunjin Ryu, and then one of Brett Anderson or Alex Wood. I would personally want to go with Alex Wood, but I wouldn't blame anybody for wanting Brett Anderson. So out of those two rotations, and then there's also the Diamondbacks, which you wanted to talk about. They got Shelby Miller. They got Zach Greinke. They had Patrick Corbin. They had future Madison Bumgarner in Archie Brad. Dudley, and who's the fifth guy? Ruby De La Rosa?
Yes, Ruby De La Rosa, but they have about three guys in AAA, including Archie Bradley, of course, that mm-hmm. are top end prospects and that could crack the rotation. The fifth guy is probably Chase Anderson, actually.
Chase Anderson? Okay, not you don't think Robbie Ray?
No, I don't.
I was just the roster resource. It's number five. I've been so deep into football this year that I have not started to look at rotations and stuff and seeing what's for next year. So,
all these things kind of caught us by surprise. We're still in football mode, but we're trying.
Yeah, I writing for football has made it pretty much consume most of my time. And then I'm still in all six of my fantasy leagues, which sounds cool, but it's kind of a stress ball. Yeah, it's really stressful. So, Joe, out of those three rotations, how would you rank them? I personally think that I would go Dodgers, Giants, Diamondbacks, but you think that the Giants would have enough to compete with the Mets, the best rotation in the history of baseball.
Right.
So how would you rank them? Which rotation would you want to have?
Okay. I if we're just talking Giants versus Dodgers, then I'm going to say that I would rather have the Giants rotation. I mean, Clayton Kershaw is a great pitcher. He's the best, and he's in his prime, which is scary. But they also lost Zach Greinke, who is also great and it kind of, I mean, a little past his prime, but not so much past his prime that it's going to matter. He's still pretty much in his prime. So let me pull this up. Team ERAs last year, the San Francisco Giants had a 3.72 ERA. All right. And we kind of considered last year a disaster year, right? Like our second best pitcher was Mike Leake.
Yeah, I'm shocked they had a 3.72 because they were
3.72, which was better than the Kansas City Royals, who won the World Series last year. So, they were a 0.01 ERA better. The Dodgers, on the other hand, who everyone looked at and said, "Oh my God, they got these two, all like maybe two of the best top two in baseball right now." Their ERA team ERA was 3.44. So it wasn't that great. I mean, it was definitely the fifth best in baseball, but it wasn't elite or anything. I mean, you had teams like St. Louis, Pittsburgh, the Cubs, obviously the Mets, who all had better ERAs. I think that a lot of the prowess around their pitching staff last year was dependent on them retaining Greinke, and they didn't retain Greinke, and instead they're going to go and get Jose Fernandez. Now, let's say that goes through. Jose Fernandez becomes a Dodger. He's had a sub 3 ERA in every year he's pitched. Last year he had a 2.92, and that was coming off of surgery, right? Tommy John?
Yeah, he had TJ.
He had TJ. Okay. Still only 22, or it'll be 23 this year. Really young. But, I mean, is he going to be Zach Greinke? Is that what we're – let's say a best-case scenario is he's Zach Greinke last year. Which is great, right? But it still leaves them with, a team of middle tier pitchers. After that, like if their third best pitcher is Hisashi Iwakuma, and he's 35, and he put up a 3.54 last year, I'm not sure I'm stoked on their pitching staff.
Iwakuma does worry me. That his ERA is a little screwy because he got hurt in the middle of the year, injured for a while. He actually ended up the year pretty well, pitching pretty well. He had the no-hitter towards the end of the season. But you're right. He's going to be 35 during the season. His arm injuries last year, he actually had a partially torn ligament, which if it was fully torn would have led to Tommy John. So mm-hmm. So you have to worry about the tearing the rest of the way. They rehabbed it, but it's still partially torn, and that thing's going to tear eventually. So he is a Tommy John time bomb waiting to happen. Right. and where I was
and at working. 35, you don't come back from Tommy John.
No, you're done. At 35, you're done. I mean, arguably at 33, 34, you're done with Tommy John, unless you're a crazy person. But I think that, I mean, last year they were trotting out, let's take a look here. They had Dan Heron, which I completely forgot was on their team last year.
Who didn't have a terrible year last year, right?
No, an ERA of 4. But if you figure you sub him out with Iwakuma's, we'll call it 3.5 ERA, they'll be in the same ballpark. I mean, they'll be around a 3.5 ERA. So, yeah, arguably, I probably would want the Giants ahead of the Dodgers. Rotation just because of the depth of the Giants rotation and the question marks with the down the line pitchers with the Dodgers rotation.
If I just think about what the Dodgers, because that's the other end of this, is the Dodgers are going to have to give up prospects to get Jose Fernandez. And it's not just going to be the prospects they pulled from this Todd Frazier trade. Like, it's going to be either Corey Seager or Zach Lee or Julio Urias. Like, there's going to be somebody who they've held on to for a while that's going to go to the Marlins. And I just don't see that making their rotation much better than it was last year. Like, I think a best case scenario is they get Jose Fernandez and their rotation is what it was last year.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And honestly, I think that the trade to going to Miami would start with Urias. It would start with Seager, and it would start with one major league ready player, Mr. Puig, Cuban, tons of Cubans in Miami. So they'll actually start coming to games and make Jeffrey Loria a little scratch. So I think
he won't have to be the guy. They still have Stanton. I mean,
yeah. I think it'll start there. They can start the Cuban muscle crisis. I honestly think it starts with Urias, Seager, and Puig, and it goes from there.
So, well, Seager is slated as their, right, and Seager's slated as their starting shortstop. So if they give him up, they don't really have anything to replace him with. Like, they can't replace him in the lineup if they give up Seager. So it's probably not going to be Seager. It's probably going to be Urias, which only makes the future of their rotation look even worse.
Ugh, yeah, you're right. You're right, Joe. I yield.
Now, if we're moving on to the Diamondbacks, that's a different story because they've got not only Zach Greinke right now, but they also went out and they traded for Shelby Miller, who put up a 3 ERA last year, or, you know, sub 3.10 ERA. Everyone thinks, you know, even the most negative prospects about him are that he's a 1A or a 2 pitcher. Like, he might not be a top tier 1, but he might be a 1A or a number 2. So even the people who are most down on him would agree that that's the case. And he's the Diamondbacks' number 2. They also have Patrick Corbin coming off of Tommy John, and he was arguably going to be their ace of the future, so he slides into the number 3. And then they've got 3 guys in AAA, Archie Bradley, Chase Anderson, and Braden Shipley, all of whom are top prospects. And they also nabbed Kyle Drabek, who's a little, you know, past his potential age. He's 28, but he was a top prospect for a long time with Toronto. So I think the future of the Diamondbacks and even the present of the Diamondbacks looks a lot brighter than the Dodgers. And if we're talking about any team that would rival the Giants, it would be the Diamondbacks.
In terms of, wow, so you would put the team with the best pitcher of our era as the third best pitching staff in their own division. And it's, I mean, while I don't necessarily agree, I think it's a lot closer than people think, you know?
Right.
You made a lot of compelling points about how they are set up well for the future and for the present. They've got a lot of guys that are ready to go. I was confused by the Shelby Miller trade. I was talking to my friend Daniel about it. Daniel who commented on our Shark, our Samarja back and forth about the podcast material. Uh-huh. I said that they're paying a lot when they're not really in a position to go all in. And with that pitching staff, with the cheap Paul Goldschmidt contract, with AJ Pollock taking a step forward, I mean, if Yosemite Tomas develops a little bit further, they may be closer than I thought to making a move with that staff, and if all their guys take a step forward, like if AJ Pollock continues, so maybe they are in a position to go all in when I didn't think they were.
I mean, they probably need another bat, and Yosemite Tomas taking a step forward would go a long way. And it's not out of the realm of possibility. I mean, he's 25 years old, and he was a rookie last year. So I think that's definitely a possibility. They probably need one more guy. And I don't know who that's going to be, if it's David Peralta, if it's Jake Lamb. One other guy has to step up, or they have to be willing to trade one of those young pitchers who are in AAA, which is practically major league ready, to go get another bat. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Paul Goldschmidt is probably the best power hitter of our, like currently in baseball next to Bryce Harper. So,
Mr. Stanton?
Has Stanton outproduced Paul Goldschmidt?
Well, Stanton's a dinger machine. Well, he got hurt too. Don't forget he's been hitting through injury. So hold on, let's do this. So while I look that up, why don't you start talking about everybody's favorite team, the baby Cubs? They were really good last year. They had got a lot of good players, and then this year they went out and they got everybody else.
Well, I think they deserve a less vague introduction. So I'm going to kind of elaborate on what you're doing. They had an incredible year last year. It was the year that I think most baseball experts expected them to have. Everything came to fruition for them. Chris Bryant became one of the better power hitters in baseball. Anthony Rizzo retained his great status as a power hitter. Jorge Soler didn't necessarily do well, but he's also only 23 going on 24. So there's plenty of room for him to improve. Addison Russell came up and did great. They ended up clearing the roster of Starlin Castro and making room for Addison Russell to be their everyday shortstop at 21 years old, which is incredible to think what he could be in the near future. And then they also had a guy like Kyle Schwarber come out of nowhere as a backup catcher / left fielder for them. So everything on offense came to fruition. Everything in their pitching staff, for the most part, came to fruition. They had great production from Arrieta, who established himself as a top five pitcher in baseball. John Lester went out and pitched very admirably for them, at least in the first half, or in the second half. Sorry. First half, he was a little shaky. Second half, he was the ninth best pitcher in baseball. And then John Lackey came in and produced very admirably. Jason Hamill was a top-end fourth starter, maybe the best fourth starter out there. And Kyle Hendricks also produced very well. So their pitching staff looks really good. Their offense looks really good. But then they still kind of had some questions surrounding second base because they moved Addison Russell to short. Well, they went out and they got Ben Zobrist, who can play every position, including second base. And then there were some questions. Well, what about the outfield? You know, Jorge Soler might not be as good as we all thought he was. Well, okay, we'll just go out and get Jason Hayward in his prime, the top free agent in baseball. So going into next year, they're still the baby Cubs. They still don't have a player outside of Zobrist now and Montero over 30, or actually over 27. They just look like they're going to dominate the league life next year, as they did this last year, or at least as they started to do toward the end of this last year.
Yeah, I thought they were going to be really good this year, and they went out and they punched me in the mouth and said, "Jeff, what were you thinking? We are incredible." And they did fill all their holes. They even got rid of question marks. Starlin Castro, now a Yankee, and he was a big question mark for them last year. In terms of his effort, his defense, his hitting, basically everything about him was a question mark last year. So they kicked him to the curb and they moved on. I actually heard something kind of interesting that I want to run past you to see if you would agree, that Zobrist turned down more money, reports were, from the Giants to go to the Cubs. And Jason Hayward turned down more money to go to the Cubs. Do you think that they did this? Do you think that this is an actual, like, the reason being, hey, we want to be part of this? You know, they look around at what the Cubs have. They look at Chris Bryant. They look at Addison Russell. They look at everything else, and they go, we're going to take less money to go be part of this. Do you think that that's what's happening, and that's just going to push them over because everybody wants to be part of this, so they're building this? Does that make sense?
That's part of it. I mean, the hype train surrounding the Cubs going into last year was, at least among baseball experts, was very high. And then they were only rewarded when they started to do well, better and better. And as a result, the hype train grew more and more. And pretty soon you had every ESPN analyst that was on it, you know, saying this is the Cubs year. I think that that's part of it. I also think that it's just easier to hit in Chicago than it is in San Francisco. And I think that the Giants are always going to have a harder time attracting top flight hitters, more so than top flight starters.
Yeah, I exactly, for the exact same reason. You know, it's easier to get there. So are you think chewing for the pennant? I mean,
I think they're a shoo-in for the pennant. I think there's certainly now a shoo-in to win the NL Central at the very least. But you know, if we're talking about the pennant, I would have a, nothing's a shoo-in, because the NL, in my opinion, is a much better division than the AL. So even to make the playoffs as a wild card, like what we saw with the Pirates last year, you got to go out and win 90 plus games. So that's tough to do for anybody, but I think the Cubs are certainly capable of it. And, you know, they still have the most savvy GM. I mean, he's their president now, but he's essentially their GM, and Theo Epstein in baseball. And if things aren't working out in one area, he's going to go out and improve it.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, let's say John Lackey doesn't perform as well. Maybe he does fall off the face of the earth at 37. It wouldn't be inconceivable. Theo Epstein's going to go out and he's going to get another starter. He's going to take a risk on maybe a guy who isn't working somewhere else. I don't know, a name just deceives me on this, but I'm sure there's one guy who's maybe 26, 27, showed some promise early on. Then he started to flame out a little bit, and he'll go out and he'll sign him and he'll throw him into the rotation and see if he works. And if he doesn't work, he'll go out and find another one, but of young promising guys that, it's difficult to think that they're not going to be contenders next year.
Yeah. Sorry, I was a bit distracted figuring out the Stanton and Goldschmidt face off. So sorry, uh-huh. I didn't have much to contribute to that. But
yeah. No, that's okay. Yeah. Do you need a little more time? I mean, I can go on for the Cubs forever.
Let's see. So I pulled up the last 3 years, and I'm getting the total together right now. So. Neither one of them.
You still have Javier Baez. Can we talk about that?
Javier Baez will not be a Cub in a month.
Boom. In a month.
How's that for a hot take?
It's very bold, and it's a very hot take. It's probably true. I mean, they wouldn't go out and sign Ben Zobrist if they thought they had Javier Baez to step into second base. But Javier Baez is not bad. He's still, what is he, like 23? He's 23 years old, and he showed massive power potential in the minors. He's in AAA and he's somewhat producing. And I mean, you got to think that someone's going to want Javier Baez, and that the Cubs just aren't going to give him away.
Oh, no, I agree. I'm just saying he won't be a Cub in a month. So,
okay. Well, that'll fill whatever hole they, you know, feel they have.
They want to fill?
Yeah.
All right. Joe, are you ready? First of all, we disrespected quite a few guys when we were talking about the Sluggers. We disrespected Chris Davis. We disrespected Nelson Cruz. We disrespected Miguel Cabrera. All of them.
Jose Abreu?
Jose Abreu, not so disrespected. He's in the same gold. Yeah. We disrespected Jose Bautista. We disrespected E5. There's a lot of good.
I take anyone in Toronto who's hitting those home runs out of the equation. I mean, they're just, yeah. let's be real here. They're hitting in Toronto.
Joe, you disrespected Josh Donaldson.
That's true.
So over the last three seasons, Giancarlo Stanton has hit 24 home runs, 37 home runs, 27 home runs. Okay.
Okay.
For a total of 88 home runs. So 88 home runs over the last three seasons. Do you think Goldschmidt had more or less than that?
Probably slightly less.
Slightly less.
But only because of the 37 year in the middle there.
Well, Paul Goldschmidt had 36. Paul Goldschmidt had 33. Paul Goldschmidt had 19. For a total of 88.
19 last year?
No. These aren't in order. They ended up in descending order. Okay. So for a total of 88 home runs. So over the last three seasons, Stanton and Goldschmidt have hit the exact same number of home runs.
Impressive. Wow. Yeah.
I don't know how we narrowed in on those two hitters to argue about who was better at hitting home runs, that they hit the same amount of home runs over the last 3 years.
And neither one was probably the best power hitter in baseball.
Not even close. Like,
well, there you go.
Chris Davis has 100 home runs in two seasons. So,
wow. Yeah.
So they were not even close. But Chris Davis is the only player that had two seasons higher than either one of their best seasons. So there, I think, I don't know.
I mean, Chris Davis is interesting, but judging by what's going on in free agency with him, obviously the rest of the league doesn't think that way. So,
well, Chris, he wants $200 million. I would not give Chris Davis $200 million because he hit 100 home runs in those two seasons. But sandwiched in the middle, he hit what, like one?
I mean, apparently some people want to give Bryce Harper $500 million. So, like, Chris Davis is the best power hitter in baseball, maybe $200 million isn't out of the realm of you know, conceivability.
I think that's loony. I mean, I saw headlines.
I wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
But, you know.
I saw headlines where Chris Davis wants 8 years, $200 million. I was like, well, I would like 8 years, $200 million contract too. That doesn't mean I deserve it.
Right. I mean, Stanton got over $300 million, and that was considered insane. That was a year ago.
I forgot about that. That is still insane.
So if Stanton, I mean, and it's not like Stanton has anything else to his game. He's a power hitter. If Chris Davis is better than Stanton, then, you know, I mean, maybe it's not crazy to go out there and ask for $200 million, especially when teams are throwing around money like it's nothing right now.
Yeah, I think a lot of that might be. Let's see, that Chris Stanton. Wow, imagine the power hitter Chris Stanton would be. I think the thing is that Giancarlo Stanton is, when he signed that contract, he was 25, and so they were buying out his prime. You know, they were paying for his prime, whereas Chris Davis is going to be 30 before the next season starts. So,
yeah. I get it. I mean, you don't go out and pay him that much money, but I don't know. It was worth a try. I mean, I'm not going to fault the guy for going out there and trying to cash in on the craziest MLB offseason ever. I mean, it just seemed like everybody, all the teams were willing to spend about $100 million more than they were willing to spend last year. Like, the Giants threw out two pitcher contracts for guys who were 30 or older, right? Like 29 or older, for an average or a total of $220 million over the course of 5-6 years. Like that would have been unheard of 2 years ago. And now it's just people are like, oh, okay. It just seems like this is like a bizarro MLB offseason or free agency period.
Yeah, it reminds me a lot of those years where in the NBA a while ago, where everybody cleared space to go get super free agents, and they didn't end up with them. And so people were just shelling out these ridiculous contracts. Like Rashard Lewis got like $100 million contract. Stuff like that. It reminds me a lot of those couple of years where people are just doling out these insane contracts left and right.
I mean, people must be coming to games. Like, baseball must be bigger than it ever has been.
Well, actually, it's the TV money. That's what it is. That's why the Diamondbacks could afford Greinke. Was their TV deal went up by like $50 million a year. They signed a new one. So, I mean, that went almost most of that goes straight into Greinke's pocket. But
Most of that goes straight into the president's pocket and the CEO's pocket. But of that definitely goes to Greinke.
Well, they're making $50 million more a year, and they're paying Greinke $34 million. I mean, that goes – I mean, that's most of it straight into Greinke's pocket.
Oh, so. Most of the $50 million, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Most of the $50 million goes straight into Greinke's pocket. So.
Right.
So, all right, I think we beat baseball to death. Anything else you want to say about it?
We didn't get to talk about the Mets.
All right, Joe. How good are the Mets? They're incredible. They re-signed Bartolo Colon, Noah Syndergaard, Jacob DeGrom. They're the best. Did that work?
They are the best.
We didn't even what talk have about they done Steve this Matt. Offseason? I haven't.
He hasn't done. They haven't done anything. They got Bartolo Colon. That's what they did. They traded Arizona for Addison Reed, which is nothing, but. Jeff? Hello?
All right, take two. So technical difficulties, we're back. Joe, the Mets are great. What have they done this offseason? Neil Walker as Drupal Cabrera?
Did they get Neil Walker, really? Oh, they got a terrible, that's right.
Yeah, they got Neil Walker from Pittsburgh, and I think it was for one of their starters.
Wow.
Noah Syndergaard? No.
No.
John Neese.
John Neese, right. Yeah. Okay, I mean, that's not bad. They got Addison Reed, which is the other guy.
Nope. Excited about. Addison Reed. Now I think they're great.
Good. Yeah, I mean, they really didn't do anything. They still have Zach Wheeler. I got to think they're going to go out and sign somebody / put a trade together. Like, when I look at Carlos Gonzalez, I think, like, that's a guy that should go to the Mets. Right?
Yeah, I mean, I could see it, but what would they give back to the Rockies? Because you don't want to send one of those pitchers.
You don't want to send one of those pitchers, but maybe send one of the guys in the minors. Maybe you send a ton of low-level guys. Like they've got Dominic Smith, who's a 20-year-old first baseman and their number three prospect. Or, I don't know. They've got a lot of like double A and lower A guys. Like if the Rockies aren't looking to contend this year or next year, and they're just looking to totally rebuild, they've got enough pieces to probably get that done.
Okay.
And maybe they trade Zach Wheeler. You know, assuming that he comes back with a clean bill of health.
Oh, poor Zach Wheeler. That guy's gonna get bounced around. Get a couple Tommy Johns. Don't you wish the Giants had traded as Gary Brown instead for Carlos Beltran?
Are you saying you wish we still had Zach Wheeler?
That would be nice.
We can get Zach Wheeler. I mean, we piece together some prospects from the Mets way.
Yeah, if we really wanted Zach Wheeler, we could go get Zach Wheeler. I don't think that would be a problem.
No, I don't think he's too worn. Anyway, I was just going out on. I mean, I thought it bared mentioning that we at least throw out the Mets and still talk about how they are probably the best young rotation in baseball.
Yes, I agree. All right. So now we beat baseball to death. And our discussion, Joe, it was a home run.
All right.
All right. So you mentioned before the podcast, you wanted to switch gears a little bit, talk about some Kings basketball. Cause right before we started recording, we found there was a breaking news. The Kings have agreed to trade Caron Butler because he wants more playing time. Looks like the leading candidate is going to be the Bucks, but we don't know where it's going to be. And I think that's smart. If Butler wants to play more, the Kings aren't going to play him. So, you know, a mutual parting of ways, as Jed York would put it.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it had to be done. We weren't starting Caron Butler, and we weren't playing him any substantial minutes. So, or any minutes, it's possible. I think with the emergence of Omri Caspi this season, it's made Caron Butler and arguably any other small forward slash forward that we had on the bench negligible. Like, we don't need a lot of those guys, and Caron Butler is even at the end of that bench.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, he has played 80 minutes this year. He's behind Seth Curry, Quincy Acey, and James Anderson are the three guys ahead of him. So, yeah. So he if he wants out, I don't blame the guy. It's probably his last year. The Kings, he's riding the pine for a team that's probably won't make the playoffs. So I would want to get out too, to go do literally anything else.
Yeah, I mean, if he wants to go and be with a contender, that's fine. But he's not going to play for a contender.
No, but he wants to be a team that gets him more playing time, is what it looks like. And so,
you got to go to a team even worse than the Kings.
Well, yeah, or has a hole at small forward, which I don't know why the rumor would be the Bucks, because
it ain't the Bucks. They got plenty of forwards.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. So the Kings right now are 10-15. Not exactly going how I thought that they would have been going this year. There's been some injuries. Boogie got hurt again. He's had some lingering issues from that. Willie Cauley-Stein had a displaced fracture, I think it was. His bone was sticking through his skin, so that's Ooh. Cool. He's out for 4 to 6 weeks right now. Yeah, it's not really going how I thought it would be going. I don't think it's going how you thought it would be going.
That being said, we're a game out of eighth place.
That's true. It's things
and
could
we
be
really only expected them to make the playoffs. So
yeah, it's because the West is nowhere near as good as anybody thought they would be. The Warriors are doing all the winning, and they've sort of broken the rest of the West. They've broken their spirits, I guess. So despite being 10-15, I mean, they actually, in the games that DeMarcus Cousins plays, they actually are above 500. I think as of last night, they were 9-8.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's true, because they were 1-7 without him. So actually, in games with Boogie, they're above 500 this year, which is really good, considering that recently Cousins has been a detriment to the team. He hasn't been playing so well. I don't think he's quite over his back issue that made him miss a few games yet. Uh-huh. And I think he should stop his 3-point shooting experiment.
I want to talk about that.
Yeah. So he started off really good, and now he's really bad, and he's still jacking him up. So what did you want to say about his little 3-point shooting experiment?
Well, you know, it's, I mean, just to make it this conversation a little bit clearer, he's making 1.3 3-pointers. I think, oh my God, that's, you know, burgeoning, Kevin Love level. He's also taking 4.1 of them, and he's shooting 31%. So not excellent. But it's certainly higher than he's ever shot before when he wasn't shooting, taking any threes.
Oh, yeah.
It's an interesting facet to his game. I mean, I think when you look at Boogie this year, you see a drop from 12.7 rebounds to 10.7 rebounds. You see a drop from 3.6 assists to 2.7 assists. You see his turnovers drop. I mean, that's a good thing. But you also see his blocks drop, his steals drop, his points go up slightly. And his regular field goal percentage has dropped to 42% from 46 the year before and 49 the year before that. So it's almost like as he's entering his prime, he's really trying to add more elements to his game than are necessary. And it's detracting from the other elements that he had, which were that he was a really, really strong rebounder. And now he's still a strong rebounder, but he's not anywhere near elite rebounding. So, or elite defensively, or even close to competent defensively. So it's really interesting to watch him evolve and look at the path that he's decided to take. I think there is an explanation for this 3-point thing, which is that he's playing for George Karl, who is notorious for allowing players to explore the full range of offensive capabilities that they have. in his up-tempo offense, it makes it really easy for a guy like Cousins to just kind of pull up and hit a three, or pull up and take 4 to 5 threes. But I haven't fully settled on whether I like the three-point percentage. Look, if it was a total disaster and he was shooting below 200% or 20%, I would say that he needs to stop. But 31%, that's at least, like, interesting, right? Like, that's in that range that it's not good enough that he should be taking this many threes, but it's also not bad enough that he should totally cut it out of his game.
Yeah, I just don't think he should be taking four a game.
Agreed. Do you think he should be taking three a game?
Two and a half. I think when the opportunity presents itself, that's enough that it's a threat for it to happen, but it's not so much that it's going to
take him out of the paint.
Exactly. Yeah, and it's the sort of thing where they have to respect it. So he can, you know, if he turns the four attempts into two and a half attempts and an extra pump fake a game, he gets the Marco Bellinelli pump fake at the top of the key special. And they have to bite on it. He's a good enough ball handler and passer that I think that'll open up some things in the offense. I just think they need to rein him in just a little bit. But the problem with Boogie is it's hard to rein him in just a little bit. And you mentioned his rebounding assist numbers are down. How much of that do you think is – I think a good amount of that is Rajon Rondo. I mean –
Well, I think the assist numbers, you could say that, but I think the rebounding numbers should be as big as ever in the George Karl system. I mean, we're averaging the third most points in the NBA per game, and that means we're running up and down the floor a lot. There are a lot of shots being taken. We've gotten new three-point shooters like Marco Bellinelli. Rondo takes a decent share of threes. Rudy Gay always takes a lot of threes. So I think there's a lot of rebounding opportunities, but because he's pulling up and hitting threes or he's looking to take threes, he's not in the paint as much as he used to be.
Yeah. So there's fewer rebound opportunities for him as well.
Right. Because, but that's self-imposed. That's not.
Yeah. Yeah. Because of his location.
Right. I think it's interesting. You know, we kind of have to see where it goes. I think the thing that's really concerning is the 42% field goal percentage. Like, there's no excuse for his field goal percentage to be going down every year as he enters further into his prime. Like, he's a center. It should be going up. It should be hovering around the 50% mark. Like, that is something that bothers me, and I think probably bothers the coaching staff as well.
Yeah, and I'm going to see how much of that is he's been he's been really bad lately, so I want to see how much of that has caused the drop off. So since he came back from his back injury, he's averaging. Let's see. Let me sum this up here. Since he's been back from his back injury, yeah, he's shooting 37.5%. So that'll drag it right down right there. So in his last seven games, yeah, he's shooting 37.6%. So there is your big problem. I think that's what's dragging it down.
And if that's the case, then it's really nothing to worry about. That's going to improve as his injury goes away.
Yeah, as his injury resolves, I think he'll do much better. Let's see here. Let me zero this out and see what it was before his back injury. Give me 1 second here. Before his back injury, 45%. So still not great, but
at least close to what he did last year.
Exactly. Closer. And his rebounding, he was getting almost 1.5 more rebounds per game and blocking more shots. So there is that. Remember, he started off the year on a huge tear. He had a little streak in there where he was scoring like 30 points, like, 4 out of 5 games or 4 out of 6 games or something. So,
wow. Yeah. This would be a nice time for him to reestablish his post game while he's rehabbing his back, because you know, as well as anybody, if you're out on the perimeter and you're just talking up threes, it's not like you need your back to put that much velocity behind the ball.
Yeah, you need your back, but I'm wondering if he may be protecting his back, because if it's tender, he doesn't want to go up and bang up against people in the post. So it's sort of a you need your back, Joe. I don't know if that's too hot takey, but
no, it's not.
You need your back for to do things. As I'm learning, you need your neck to do things. But it's just going to be cascading, and he should get into the post so that he can, you know, take the easier shots. Like you said, he doesn't have to really hoist it up. But he's probably avoiding it because he doesn't want to get that forearm in his back, and especially in his lower back, which I think is the problem.
Right.
So,
do you think some of it has to do with the presence of Kufis and Kallestein?
Could be. I was wondering where you're going with the president. I was like, no, I don't think it's Obama's fault.
I don't know. I thought I was blaming for some.
Could be. But it could be the presence of Kufos. Kallestein just stays out of the way on offense, but Kufos is going to be in the post more. You get two guys in the post, it's going to gum it up. So right. That does make him sort of like, for lack of a better term, I guess like a stretch five, which isn't really a thing.
Right. Well, it is about Kevin Love.
Yeah, that's true. Kevin Love is sort of that, but Boogie is much better down low than Kevin Love. That fits his game more. So I think he should try to get down low more. Hopefully, Kallestein being out will encourage Cousins to stay in the paint more.
Agreed. So we touched on Cousins. Is there any other reason you can think of for why the Kings are sub 500? Because as we pointed out, when Cousins plays, they're above 500. So there has to be something else that's going on. But when you look at the stats, it seems like everyone on the team is having a career year. You know, like you can maybe look at Bellinelli's shooting percentage, or like you can look at Rondo's turnovers, but you really can't pinpoint it on any one player, because it all looks like they're having the best years of their career.
No, and if the stats on the Kings are sort of misleading, because a lot of their problems is defensively.
Right.
They have some real, and what the problem is too is they, more than any team I've seen watching basketball, they have their problems compound on themselves so much, where teams will go on 10, 12, 14, 16 point runs just out of nowhere. And the Kings will be up like four, and then all of a sudden they'll turn around and they're like down 12. And it's because they make a lot of stupid mistakes, they have a lot of turnovers, they have a lot of defensive lapses, they have some troubles with switching that I've noticed. They just leave guys just wide open.
Well, it's almost like they don't have a defensive game plan whatsoever.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the problem, is they don't have a defensive game plan, and they don't have really good defensive players outside of Cousins is a good defensive player, and I think, yeah, and Kallestein's out, so it's like Rondo's actually been doing pretty well.
McLemore? I would say McLemore's pretty good.
I think the problem with that is McLemore's not getting as much run as I think he should.
Agreed.
For it to be a real benefit. Here's the best way to put this. DeMarcus Cousins has missed 8 games and has played more minutes than Ben McLemore. So Ben McLemore is not getting the run that I think he needs to really use his defensive skills, which I think have gotten better. They've gotten progressively better every year he's been in the league. So
what do you think that is? I mean, do you think that just has to do with like, because it's certainly not a decline. I mean, if you look at his per 36 minute stats, he's arguably better than he was last year. He has more steals. He's gone up from 1 steal per game to 1.6 per game. His assists have gone up slightly. His rebounds have gone up slightly. His shooting percentage has gone up 2 points. So he's gone from 43 to 45. He seems to be improving in a lot of areas instead of going backwards. So it's kind of confusing as to why his minutes dropped from 32 to 21. Like, I expected some drop with the introduction of Bellinelli, but not that drastic.
Yeah, and it's not Bellinelli so much as it is Bellinelli and Collison. Carl likes running out Rondo and Collison together for a small ball backcourt that is with that. Plus, they want to put Marco Bellinelli out there at the two more. And for some reason, James Anderson was getting a bunch of minutes at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, that's confusing.
Yeah,
that signing is looking more and more confusing.
They should pair Caron Butler and James Anderson and get literally anything for them. But it's just Ben McLemore is just being left out in the cold just because the way that Carl's rotation works, he wants Rondo and Collison together, or he wants Bellinelli out there. There during the offseason, there was things about how Ben McLemore just wasn't getting the offensive system. So it may just be that he never worked his way out of the doghouse, and that would be a perfectly George Karl thing for him to do, which is turn to his plan Bellinelli and his plan Collison and not look past that for Ben McLemore because he didn't get it 4 months ago during the offseason. So
yeah, and that's really unfortunate because I think Karl deserves any credit, and he does deserve a lot of credit. It's for making us at least hopeful about what this team can be, and that this team can be competitive, at least in one area, which is offense. Mm-hmm. The unfortunate thing is his Bellinelli's not performing all that well from a shooting percentage standpoint. I mean, he's hitting 38% of his shots, and he's playing 26 minutes, as opposed to Ben McLemore, who's hitting 45% of his shots. And now, as I told you, is playing 22 minutes. So
yeah, it defies logic because Bellinelli, I mean, there were stretches this year, there were 3-4 game stretches where he was like objectively terrible, like not even like bad or, oh, you know, this, he was missing assignments, he was missing rotations. He was like objectively bad at everything he was doing, and he was still getting run over McLemore. So it's just the very George Karl, you know, these are my guys, this is what we do, this is our rotation, old school coach type deal.
Yeah, I mean, I would like to see Karl with a little bit more initiative about what he's going to do, because or with a little bit more logic behind what he's going to do, because if you're taking Ben McLemore out because you're saying, okay, I'm willing to sacrifice defense for threes, which is essentially what you're saying when you're putting Bellinelli in over Ben McLemore. I'm going to put in threes and I'm going to take away defense. Then why do you need DeMarcus Cousins hitting, you know, taking 4 threes a game? Like, he should be reeling that back. Like, you don't need you don't need all the threes in the world at the expense of any semblance of defense.
No, you don't. But that's why they're 10-15 and not 15-10. You know,
right?
It's just the symptoms of a team that needs to get some stuff sorted out and in a hurry before they the season gets too far away from them. I mean, it's just a lot of these little things. I mean, you hit the nail on the head with a lot of stuff. No defensive game plan. Baffling rotations and you know, just stuff like that.
That being said, are you excited about the Kings? I mean, are they trending in the right direction? Are they trending in the wrong direction? Like, what's going on with them? I mean, they just beat the Rockets, and they're a playoff team.
They're trending in the right direction. My expectations are tempered. Every year I'm excited about the Kings, but we'll see how it goes. I'm not getting bitter. I think they'll get, yeah. I think they'll be better. They're better than their record.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I would agree. I think they're going to get better. I think they've endured a lot more than people are giving them credit for. They've played some really good teams to start off the season. I'm still waiting for that stretch of crappy teams where they can pick up wins, and it hasn't come.
Yeah. It's been pretty relentless so far.
It's been really brutal. Plus we've had the DeMarcus Cousins injuries. We had the freakish Rondo, you know, outburst that cost him a game.
Yeah, we won't even get into that. That's,
yeah, it's a whole other thing.
Thoughts here.
Right. But it's, I mean, I think they've endured a lot, and it's just unfortunate that it hasn't made its way toward more wins and a plus, you know, an over 500 record. But I think if they just keep at it, they're going to be in the playoffs. I would still say they're a good bet to make the playoffs, especially with the weak state of the West.
Yeah, I think the West has done them a lot of favors to not run away with it while the Kings were floundering. So I'd like to thank the West for doing that.
For being crappy.
Yeah, thank you, West. All right, well, I think that'll do it. We got, this is a long one. We've been talking for about an hour and a half, a little bit of a technical difficulties in there. But before we get going, is there anything you really wanted to get out there, Joe?
You know, I think it's nice to not have to talk about the Niners.
Oh, I was hoping we'd go a whole podcast without talking about the Niners. They're bad. They stink. Right. Turns out Blaine Gabbert isn't a good quarterback and Jim Tomsula isn't a good coach.
Who'd have thunk it, huh? Yeah,
who would have thought that, huh?
Starting Sean Brown at running back isn't going to be a successful formula.
It's a successful formula for this guy in fantasy football.
Right.
But
oh well.
Do you want to have a 2-minute requiem for your team? Because you had one of the unluckiest fantasy football seasons I've ever seen, or do you just want to move on from it?
Well, thank you, first of all, for bringing it up. I'm reconciling it every day.
It's good to talk it through, talk it out, talk about it.
So I had it would almost, you know, if we're talking about only 2 minutes, I think I only have enough time to list everybody who got injured or underperformed for my team. So the key players are Arian Foster, Deion Lewis, Andrew Luck.
CJ, Rawls.
Yeah, Thomas Rawls, TJ Yeldon,
CJ Anderson.
CJ Anderson. Gosh, Jamie Collins was out with like a freak illness for 4 weeks or something, 4 to 5 weeks. I held on to Austin Seferian Jenkins. I definitely got in on that nonsense. Wide receivers. I had one go down. I can't remember his name. it's just been bad. You know, I've had Travis Kelce. He's underperformed. It's been one of those years of like, I was probably the most active on the waiver wire. I lucked out on a ton of waiver wire pickups. I don't think I made one bad move all year. And I just continued to suffer injury after injury after injury. And I reached the point at the end where I almost didn't want to win that last matchup, because if I win, then I have to pay attention next week when my team is – oh, we didn't mention LeGarrette Blount. When my team has to trot out Duke Johnson as its best running back.
Oh, see, I would have been okay with you running that out, because you'd be taking on hashtag Cam Lives Matter over here.
Right. So you were rooting for my team. That's good to know.
I was always rooting for your team all year, Joe.
Good. Good to know. Well, I'm rooting for your team now, so that's a positive.
I'm going to take out Brian. He's starting Jordan Matthews, who I've been railing against all year, so I'm pretty excited. It'll be a twofer. So, all right. You feel better now? You talked it out?
No, I feel worse. I'd almost forgot.
You feel worse? Oh, okay. Well, on that note then, I think that'll do it for this episode of Homers at the Bat. It's been a long one. I thank you guys if you're still listening, and thanks, guys.
Oh, my quarterback was Blake Bortles.
All right, see ya.
Bye.
Johnny Cueto, Johnny Cueto, welcome to
San Francisco.
Johnny Baseball, won't you help us win the World Series? El Rey Dominicano, El Rey Dominicano, Los Reales es muy fuego! Johnny Cueto, he's our hero. Fiesta!